It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and as it's said every year at this time on this special show we do from the rodeo, it's just me. Mike Ward's on assignment. His assignment,
authorities
his assignment is somewhere. We're getting audio back down the line there in the studio. Can you help me?
Stolen personal items.
You just turn that down, if you would,
in
the studio.
During the break-in, records from
if
the
you just pull the main lever down.
Office confirm Marte.
It's a Saturday. Thank you very much. All right, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So Mike Ward, I'm Sean. Hi. Mike Ward on assignment, which means, you know what? I think probably wherever he is offshore, he at least yesterday probably wishes he was back in the in the van here doing the show with me. But we'll find out. We'll get a report from him. He is not with me today, but we are on site once again for the 92nd annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo from Dolphin Island. It is day two, and lots to talk about. Plus, we'll get your questions on the text line. Let's see. I've already had some text line questions. Yeah, and they asked about the weather down here. Listen, you don't have to take my word for it. Let's key the mics to our guest in the van with us here, the Mobile Command Studio. First of all, the emperor of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo is Dr. Sean Powers. Good morning. Afternoon now. It's good afternoon.
Afternoon. And as far as the weather,
I mean, look outside, y'all. I mean, this is like when we just came back down, we hit the bridge, the bay and the sound. I don't want to get people out there in front of me before I can go fishing this afternoon. Look gorgeous. I mean, it's laid out.
No, it's beautiful. And in fact, it's the only issue is it's getting a little warm, so we're always happy to sit here with you for a little while.
See, this is, I can always get guests when the temperature gets above 90. The air conditioning works in this thing, and I get guests. And a new guest in studio, Dr. Stephen Cyphers, working with the University of South Alabama as well.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So you got it right. Sean and I were on the morning thing. You got it right. I want to do this before we get into a lot to talk about with y'all. Kind of leaderboard stuff, what you've seen so far, stories and trends. Dr. Powers, what's out there?
So this morning, late yesterday and this morning, the sharks started to come in.
And that's what you and Dr. Dryman were saying yesterday. That's when you thought it would start happening.
Yeah, so we've had, don't kill me if I'm wrong, but a bull and about three tigers. And the largest tiger we just weighed in, and it's plus 500 pounds. So
impressive.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this several times. That'd have been impressive 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 years ago.
But you think it's changed that much that that's not?
I mean, the 1 year, 1,000-pound tiger. One recent year, either last year or the year before, it was 1,000-pound tiger. So,
but we're in day one. That was day one.
I know. So the sharks is always entertaining. Last night we had a big crowd out here getting ready for the concert, so everybody got to see those two tiger sharks. So you could tell how popular that category is and how fascinated the public is with sharks.
Well, and I want this question as well, too. Do they ever divulge, like on those tigers, how far they're going to catch those?
I mean, the fishermen, the shark fishermen that fish that category are pretty well known. They know Dr. Dryman. They know myself. They're pretty honest with us. And, you know, all I can say is they don't go out as far as you think.
Okay.
They go out. All right. It's outside the bay, but, yeah.
But not way outside.
Not as far as most people would think.
Because, yes. I mean, bull shark-wise, you know, growing up, I mean, bull sharks are a thing that, you know, if we're tarpon fishing on the beach or something like that, bull sharks are part of the, you know. But I always thought, for some reason, I had some mentality that tigers were something, you know, we'd see them when we'd be way offshore tuna fishing. But you're saying not that far.
Sure. I mean, there's big ones all
throughout. Well, the range is everywhere.
Right.
What I'm saying is
but
the proximity north.
You don't have to go out that far, especially this time of year. So so we're hoping that obviously we see even larger ones. I would say the end.
How big was the bull?
You know, I can't repeat right weights. It's on the ticket.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Just joking. It's on the leaderboard.
Okay.
It's published. But we call a few weights, so it's always a little difficult to remember individual ones. But other thing is the inshore categories, you know, for this early in the rodeo, there's some fish that may make the distance. I mean, you know, usually you're like, eh, yeah, that's not going to make it.
I mean, well, listen, that's the Venice effect, I call it, right? You know, and I know other places, but we used to call it the Venice effect. So people look for daily prizes because they're fishing closer to here. And then the fish, Venice meaning the whole, a bunch of other places, but Louisiana and stuff, those fish would come in Sunday. I've been that guy that's been on the board Friday, watching that fish on Saturday. Oh, my gosh. Sunday, the boats come back in from Venice, and you're like, well, that was fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
But you talk about like that sheep's head. Yesterday, alcohol weight, it was 9 pounds something.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and that's one of the ones when I have a couple of assistant judges, so we're not closed while I'm in here weighing in fish. But when they called the 9 pound sheep's head, I was like, let me see that. I was like, wow, that is a 9 pound sheep's head. I mean, they get bigger, but and you never know.
But that, yeah, that's it. I was saying, and obviously, it's a local fish because it was weighed in here first thing Friday morning.
Yeah. You know where the Venice effect, and that's a great word for it, has really come in? It's always come in for redfish. Redfish just get fatter in Louisiana. But lately, for blackfish, triple tail,
if
you're going to find a plus 30 pound triple tail, I'm not saying you can't do it here. But usually your first guess is that fish is from Louisiana.
Right. And I mean, I've stood in line. It was last year before I was weighing in. It was on Sunday. And there had been some, I didn't even have a blackfish in the mix. But there were people been, you know, kind of 17 to 19 pound through Friday, Saturday kind of stuff. And we're sitting there on Sunday, I think last year before rodeo, and a boat pulls up. And I see them unload. And they're coming in from Venice, or yeah, it's southeast Louisiana somewhere, or maybe as far over as Fouchon or something like that, but I didn't ask them exactly where, but they came in with the ice bags, kill bags, and when they opened them up, I saw the first one. I said, oh my gosh, look at that triple tail, look at that blackfish. And then two more, each man on the team had a 30-pound plus blackfish, which is just incredible. And that is a Venice effect. The redfish, too. I mean, you're spot on. Yeah, I used to fish the redfish tour in another lifetime. And, you know, we always loved our Venice stops because we're fishing slot fish. For people who don't know how the tour worked, we had to fish them inside the slots. And I'm going to throw this out with having the scientists sit here. We used to focus on those that were kind of in the passes and closer to where there were pogies, because it seemed like the redfish down there that stayed on pogies more than crustaceans seemed to be fatter, you know, for the length.
And that's true. Any species, the reason they switch over to fish as their diet, particularly pogies, because they're so oil-rich and fatty. Yeah, that's what they fatten out on.
So, all right, with that being said, anything else? I'm not asking you to give the winning unusual. Have there been any unusual fish come in yet? Because that's something we like to watch.
Not really. Those usually all are going to come from the folks that are deep dropping, and I assume there weren't many of those yesterday.
I saw some fish. Some of my friends, I guess they've got it with some kind of way to get a signal from out there, because I've seen some videos from way offshore yesterday, and I wouldn't. Trolling would have been the most I would have done. I don't think you could have set up to deep drop. But it's laying out today, like we said, not just here in shore, but it's laying out for Saturday, the rest of today and Sunday.
What was scary, and I wouldn't have done it, just to be honest with you, is the inlet was so rough on them. So a lot of them said that, you know, with the tide and the wind and the currents.
What, coming out of the bay?
Coming out of the bay. That ride past the lighthouse was spleen damage kind of a ride.
I want to talk about this as we go to the break here in a second, but we talked about red snapper yesterday. Obviously, you know, Dr. Powers, if you're around, I'm asking about red snapper. It's like a lot what we talk about. But yesterday, after weighing in my fish, I get a questionnaire, because we always talk about how this works in management. Y'all talk about the science of it. We have, Marine Resources does the human element of it, and they take the surveys from the anglers to figure out how much we're catching to apply it for our snapper app, you know, and check it in fish. But there's another dimension to it, is the human being portion of it. And we've had sit-downs, you and I and Scott Bannon, and it's like, here's the science of it, of the fish. Then there's this other part of it that's the science of the human beings, the fish, when they go after it. So when we come back, I'll talk to your partner more about this, because it's very interesting. And if y'all get surveyed down here, you're going to find out why you're getting surveyed. And we'll give you the we're not going to tell you what to answer, but we're going to tell you why you're getting surveyed when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And I will I'll grab some of the text. Here's somebody who was standing there when that tiger shark came in yesterday with his kids. We'll get his reaction. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along on this Rodeo Saturday. And we are live from the 92nd Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And a lot to talk about here on... I guess we're 50% by the time we get to noon today. We're about 50% through the rodeo, but the best is yet to come, I think. I mean, we talked about the Venice effect there. In studio, if you're just joining us, Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama Marine Sciences, and the Delphi Island Sea Lab. And right now, the emperor of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo judging, and Dr. Stephen Cyphers with the University of South Alabama as well, in studying human dimensions. What's it like working with the emperor, of the fish emperor?
It's great. There's no better place.
Is he just iron fist? He rules with iron fist?
I don't think so. I think what I would say from the grad students up through all of the faculty is he gives us the resources to do what we want to do, and kind of we'll do anything to make connections and help us have opportunities like this, being at the rodeo, for any of our students. I think they don't always immediately appreciate how lucky they are until they leave here and go somewhere else. Like I did, and then many of them come back.
Yeah, because you're an Alabamian. You went off in the Northeast, came back home to Alabama working. But this thing, what do y'all call it, Dr. Fishmas? This idea that here's this, what it would take in time to do the amount of research on fish, on anglers, on all that in another environment versus one where we all voluntarily line up and we buy tickets to go bring y'all fish to sample and opinions from anglers. I mean, it's rare. I don't know where else in the U.S. this goes on like this, but
nowhere that I know of. And I think we've appreciated how much science comes on from the natural science side and the fish that are sampled. From my side, the students that are walking around out there doing surveys of fishermen while they're waiting in line or waiting on their fish.
If you had to do that, let's say there's not a tournament going on, how many hours would it take to get the number of responses y'all could get? It's got to be really magnified here. You're shooting fish in the barrel, pun intended, with us.
Absolutely. So, like last year, for example, we surveyed over 500 fishermen in 3 days. And so,
it would take, on
a lot of surveys, if we have to call people or mail surveys to them, response rates are really low.
Right.
So, it takes a lot of time and it costs a lot more money. And ultimately, it's just not as representative as when you have everybody here. I think one of the things that South Alabama's done such a good job working with the JCs over all these decades is building rapport with the anglers. So response rate, when folks walk up and ask someone to take a survey, 95% of people say yes.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I said yesterday, and it was raining on us, and I said yes. You know, so let's talk about these questions as well. So I got asked these yesterday, and you give me the sheet, although nobody told me to bring my reading glasses, but I pushed this far enough away from me. It's a 2025 Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo Survey. So what are you trying to find out here? We can generally go through questions and give me some ideas. Like, you asked this question, and you're trying to vet what from that?
Yeah, so one of the main things we want to know is we have the science that informs how well we can, you know, manage a fishery from the biology and then the management policies that we have. But managers hear from all types of anglers if they're happy or unhappy, and there's just a wide range of perspectives from people. People want different things. What we're ultimately trying to do is characterize that to be able to say, you know, this percentage of anglers are really happy with this part of the policy. Here's the percent that's not, and kind of here's the reason why.
Right.
And in the rodeo,
reason why, that's even tougher. Like, you've got the yes or no, but then why?
Yeah, it really is. And that part is extremely diverse. I mean, for the person that comes down one weekend a year, you know, their perspective is they want to make sure that the season's open mm-hmm. and they can go fishing, and they might not care as much about the size of the fish that they catch. They just want something to be able to take home. Right. And for people that have more access, say they live here, they might want larger fish. And so this is one of the things we're trying to unpack this year, that the red snapper fishery is particularly, you know, a question of interest. And we've looked at a few species like red snapper throughout a long period of time. So we're now able to look and say, how satisfied are people in 2025 versus 2022 or
before?
You gave
me some, we're talking toward the break. Y'all have been doing these surveys since when?
We started doing surveys here in 2010. And
that's
so
pretty good data set.
We have some long periods of time now to look up.
You know, and here's where I'm going to throw some non-science in the mix like I like to do. I think the answer on days versus size is like the most popular drink size at a restaurant's a medium. I think your medium, everybody's like, I just have a medium. I just wonder, like, yes and yes. So I want more days, but I want more size. Because you could go, right, we can go extreme. You know, Dr. Powers and I talk about this all the time. I mean, back in the days when it was horrible, when the feds, you know, allocated the days and it was draconian, we'd fish a 7-day season or a 9-day season or something like that. You go back through and look at the Facebook pictures that I post back there. We caught monsters. I mean, when we fish, our fish were monsters. Yeah.
And we don't want to influence the responses for
right.
those. But I will tell you, that kind of medium thing kind of works at fast food. But most natural resource management, anything, what? It's extremes. People,
but it's
an either or.
But if you average out the extremes, if everybody's... You know, what the old thing is, like, everybody's going to be a good compromise in Congress is when both sides leave and go, well, I didn't get exactly what I wanted. You know, I mean, so.
Well, then the managers have pleased no one, and Scott Bannon's phone lights up all the time.
But it, like, the perfect world, and this is all coming from anecdotal, one person here. I do believe, without science to prove it, if there's not a derby mentality, it's open more days, you get less pressure on any given day. Because I don't feel like. You know, when it was a 9-day season, we pretty much went. It had to be really bad for us not to go, right? Because we felt we only had that many days to go. I'm like, yeah, we're just going to go to the beach and go swimming, or we're going to go trout fishing. We're not going to snap a fish.
No, and it's a natural thing. One of the things we documented in Alabama, and we coined the term, what you're talking about is effort compression or effort relaxation.
See, I knew you had a fancy term for it.
Whereas most people know it as derby mentality.
Right.
And we see that in other fisheries, right, Stephen?
Yeah, I think so. And we see, you know, how people switch between different fisheries. I mean, some people we know are going to take a fishing trip on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so if one particular fishery's closed, then they're going to shift their effort and do something else.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few specialists out there, but I think there's a lot of generalists out here. We like to catch fish. We like to catch fish, you know, by the conditions out there. But I see what you're saying about the medium thing, but I also thought, like, number of days versus size. I think I know people who travel in from elsewhere want the most number of days open so they can hit it for their vacation or whatever they're down here. At the same time, as a local, I want the most number of days because I don't, if it's rough one day or is this the other day or... You know, we're going to take a vacation and go up to Cheehaw or something when snapper season's open, go camping. I don't feel like I'm missing those, you know, oh gosh, I got to get back because I'm going to miss these days. I want to have the ability to go fishing. Now, the days of, you know, your limits consisted of 8 to 12 to 14 pound fish, those were great days. But now, if you just give me 16s, so we've talked that before, I know it's about the discard and all that. I'm happy. I think there's a lot of us who've gotten the point, maybe because we went so far in the trough. You know, with size, that if you give us our first, you know, two of on the boat, our first four legal snapper, we're good. We're going to go do something else.
But the other thing that's polarizing in a lot of anglers is this question of, do you want something open all the time?
Yeah.
Or do you want a shorter season where you can have triggerfish, amberjack, and red snapper? And, Stephen, I mean, that gets very, very different answers. And that is... Again,
that's the old,
not
that's
wrong
a,
with the science.
The price
they
of,
can tweak it.
That's the price of fuel, too. I think if you want to bring a new vector into this, bring the price of fuel. Because as fuel is expensive, you asking me, I would take some loss to be able to fish, you know, my reef species. When we go out there, not have to turn back triggerfish and amberjack. When we're on it, like, I'd like to catch my snapper, be done. Okay, caught some AJs, good. wow, big trigger, and all on the same tank of gas, because I'm in the same zone, versus going, gosh, I'm turning back triggers, oh gosh, yo, please don't catch another amberjack, you know. I mean, and I know this sounds like old man stuff, back in the old days, we refished coming up through the 80s, and those were the three fish we kept at the same time.
So that's something we're trying to look at as well, the discarding. And it's one of those areas, I'll also add some context that this is another area to where the rodeo gives us something that is really hard to do in other ways of surveying anglers, is we have everything from novice all the way up to experts. There's this thought that if you survey fishermen at tournaments, you're getting only the highly specialized, only the kind of most avid. Right. That's not true here. This right. tournament brings everybody. So we've got all varieties of anglers and all variety of motivations. And, you know, just to, again, not kind of foreshadow too many results for folks, but one of the things we're seeing is that the more novice folks, they want to see a cork go down. Kind of what they talk about fishing inshore. They just want to catch lots of stuff. They'll be okay releasing them.
I've been fishing for 52 of my 53 years. I want to see a cork go down too. But we'll come back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors live from the rodeo next. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this rodeo Saturday. Glad to have you along. Look at the text line here, too. Michael asked it about, is that tiger shark still up there? The tiger shark was yesterday, right? Came in yesterday.
That
bigger tiger?
No, the biggest tiger just came in.
The 507?
Yep.
Is it still up there?
No. We try to only hang them for a short period of time. It's kind of a balance between, you know, we want to work them up as fresh as we can for right. the science, but we do want everybody to see them, so usually they hoist them up pretty high for a little while. They'll when we get a really large one, they'll probably hoist it and let people take photos and all of that stuff.
So this, watch this, Dr. Cypress, watch me make Sean uncomfortable. Dr. Powers, if somebody wanted to see sharks with their kids, like people here, the peak time, you're going to predict it. Is it this after? When should they be here? When do you feel like there's a next wave of sharks?
Traditionally, it's this late afternoon between 4 and 7. There'll be
took the bait and did it.
You'll be so
4 and 7 this afternoon is the best chance of some
best
shark
chance.
Deer.
Not saying you won't see some tomorrow morning or now. If you want to take the chance, the morning's never crowded, so you can get really close up to the gates and everything.
But
now,
I'm just saying, if you're looking, you know, y'all are scientists looking at predictive things. If you looked at a chart of data here,
it would be this evening.
Okay.
Late. Yeah. You know, if I wanted to go to rodeo, be honest with you, I would go this afternoon, evening. You know, about 4:35, it starts to cool down. There's the weigh station still open for 2 more hours.
Yeah,
you know, tomorrow is a great day if you want to see the tuna and the big game, but it gets crowded. I mean, so, yeah.
Well, good. You gave us the time. Now people are going to go, okay, hey, kids, we're loading up about 3:30, ride down there, and we're going to see what we can see. All right, we're in this conversation with Dr. Cypress about the human dimensions of fishing, which I think is interesting here. And we went through these questions of what y'all are trying to find out. During the break, we talked about this one. How often do you fish? You were talking about, you had answers from what like low end to high end. Give me this range here.
Yeah, so I can just say from the first, you know, dozen surveys that we've collected this morning, I swung by and grabbed 4.
Okay.
And the number of days, one of the questions we ask is, how many days did you fish last year or in the past year? And of these 4, we've got 6 days, 9 days, 60 days, and 90 days. So
90, that's
it
fine.
Just goes to show. Yeah, so
I want to hang out with them.
Some folks once every other month.
Yeah.
We get a lot of that group. And then we get a lot that are the absolute most avid that are, you know, here trying to win the tournament. Everybody's trying to win the tournament.
Sure.
But there's a lot that are also trying to, punch a ticket.
Yeah, we punch a ticket so we get in the a chance to win that contender boot right there. Trust me, that's my formula. Weighed that fish in yesterday. I'm like, okay, I'm just in for this. The rest of it is gravy. What else, like, when you go through the snapper, there's questions about size, there's questions about length of season. I know this conversation comes up too about discard, you know, that about how that affects the total number that works against us, right? How many of the discarded fish make it back to the reef?
Correct.
But there is, that's why, I mean, we're asked on the, you know, snapper check and all that, how, you know, I would love a system. Honestly, I think there are people like me that if those fish are 16, 18 inches, something like that, first four of them, I'd love them not to be, any of them discard, put those four in the box and be done with it and move on.
All right, just to make sure you know the limit is two right now.
Right, but there's two people, like okay. I said, two people in the boat. Two people in the boat, like I said. So the first four we catch. I'm looking at this one right here in the van with us. So if she and I catch four, like you put those in the, without a discard. The days of...
So just again, I'm not Colonel Bannon, but just to be clear, you can catch two,
and she can,
and
catch,
she can catch
right,
two.
So
you can't
four.
Catch four.
I just said, four. So...
Sorry.
So it comes up to four.
Yes, you're giving me fingers right now.
Yeah, no, but I'm giving you four. I can give you one here in a second. But the idea being, like, the discard, because I was asked about that yesterday, too, about the discard effect and, you know, what do you feel about it and all that. So what were you trying to find out from that question?
Yeah, so Dr. Powers can elaborate on more on why this is so important in the stock assessment and then ultimately on how many, you know, fish we're able to catch. But the question of discards is still just so unresolved. And so we're using this as an opportunity to ask anglers. And the way we developed this question is for every keeper red snapper that you catch and retain, how many undersized ones have you caught and released? So we want to know that number. So we're trying to get a large sample of, like, how many are you catching and then throwing back? And then we added a follow-up question this time of how many do you think would be ideal? So, you know, right. You just said zero.
Yeah.
You prefer it to be none. There's a wide variety of perspectives on this. Some feel like the number they're currently catching and discarding is fine.
Well, but the discard, too, could have two. But, I mean, let me throw this in the works. Like, you could be discarding because you're trying to high grade.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that fish is 18 inches. Hey, got y'all, I think we can do better. Let's turn that one back.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're discarding, returning those fish because they're 15 and a half inches, you know, or they're not 16. So there's two. I mean, there's...
Correct.
Discard either way, but the motivation is different. One is you're legally bound to turn that fish back because it's not the size limit. The other one is I think we can do better.
And we narrowed to the latter for the survey.
Okay.
So we're kind of specifying undersized fish that kind of have to go back.
So, and we know this we can translate right back to season length because we've been monitoring, obviously, the population and the catch. And so we knew at the height or the height of the short seasons when they were 9 and 11 days, the best that we did is essentially 1-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, and right now, it's like 1-for-4.
Yeah, that 4 discards for 1 kept.
Yep.
That tracks with my, you
and
know,
people's experience will be slightly different depending on...
It depends on where you are, certain trips, what reefs you're on, some, you know...
But that sets up the quantitative that contrast that we can have with Stevens and use Stevens data for that because so you got to have a 9-day season or 11-day season for one out of every two, or you can have a 100-day season if you are right with one out of every four. Now, you know, the stock assessment math we can work and what that means for it, but you know, that, you know, would people accept? I mean, you know, I mean, as a fisherman, I don't want a 9-day season or 11-day. And if the cost is I go through some more bait or as we talked about on the show, that you do things to try to target larger fish.
So, yeah, I mean, just regular dropper rigs and all that stuff. You're going to have – that's another thing. You talk about the discard. I know if we go out there, if we're trying to just get some fish because we want to come back to the island early and cook and all that stuff, I'm driven to get smaller fish. Or if we're going all day and we're set up, then it's big live baits, you know, a little longer fluorocarbon leader, knocker rigs, different things. Like, we do certain things that, yes, promote one versus the other. It changes. I'm sure that changes the discard. Like, hey, how were you fishing? Hey, I was just fishing squid on a regular dropper rig, you know, or chicken rig. Okay. Versus I'm using a big croaker or you know, a butterfly hardtail on a knocker rig. There's good. If I had to guess, it's not science, I had to guess, I'm going to have fewer discards when I use big live baits and knocker rigs than I do dropping squid down. I mean,
yep.
So that's another component of this. It's like,
how are you fishing, right? I mean, how do you go after them? So have you seen over, I mean, you're talking about 2010, the data started here? You seen any trends or changes?
So without kind of foreshadowing, I would say yes. I would say that, you know, the sentiments with, we ask about a few different types of satisfaction. So we unpack it a bit. We ask about how satisfied are you with the population of these specific fisheries. So red snapper, we've been more recently asking about amberjack because Dr. Powers is leading a big project on that. So we're trying to tie the social science with the natural science. But red snapper, we've asked out for a long period of time. And I think it just validates what we all know. Anglers are eyes on the water. They see the populations. They see when size trends shift. You know, we published a paper a long time ago that Dr. Powers led, which was really fun because we were able to look at how well angler knowledge matched the actual trends that came in at the rodeo. This one was specifically on sharks, but essentially the older anglers could reconstruct size trends over time with their knowledge better than the younger anglers could.
Sure, we have more data sets, so more years. They
call it a shifting baseline, but if you haven't seen the really big fish, then you don't see that same level of kind of change over time. So those are good.
Yeah, because if your experience is only this period, when people talk about, well, you know, this area looks like this. I mean, think about here at Dolphin Island. We were talking yesterday with the mayor about somebody was asking, hey, bring the pier back. I remember taking my boat around the end of the Dolphin Island Pier being 16 feet of water. It's now 200 yards from the water, right? And so, but somebody like my kids have never seen it where it wasn't this pier over sand, and so their data set is only that, where I go, oh yeah, that used to be, yep. Well, you know, want to go through there.
We were talking about sharks, and I didn't mean to be like a 500-pound tiger shark isn't very impressive, but that's because I've just recently seen a thousand of pounds, and we asked everybody essentially in this paper, hey, is this a big shark? And it was like a 200-pound, 250-pound. And the younger folks said, oh, yeah, it's a giant shark. Only the old folks that's like, nah. Back in the day, and everybody's very dismissive when somebody says, back in my day.
That's right. Whippersnappers.
It does. So the other thing Stephen is doing a lot about that I would love to talk a little bit is coastal access for fishermen and coastal access. They're doing a big project. Congressman Carl made sure we had funding to look at coastal access. We decided with Billy Goat, the issues at Billy Goat, this might not be the perfect year
to ask about coastal access.
Yeah.
Well, and then what does that mean, too? So you talk about your picture and your perspective, you're talking about sharks. Well, I'll tell you about launches. So, you know, it started coming here in the early 1980s to Dolphin Island, and there's only a certain number of launches we use. There's way more access now, launches-wise. Now, there's also the differences, I think. I don't have science to back it up or data to back it up. A lot more people trying to launch at those launches, but there seem to be more. And I know access then means other things like piers, the kayak launches and all that. But it seems like there are more places, but there are more people trying to use them. I don't know if the amount of people at any given launch at any given day is the same. We've added more launches, but we've added more anglers.
Yeah, so that's exactly the kind of question we're trying to unpack. So we are, for that project, and we do have a couple of questions on the rodeo survey. We're asking about access because we want this this audience to tell us what they see, and we ask specifically about shore fishing access and then boat ramps. But we're also going out to those spaces. So for the rest of the year, folks that are out fishing on the piers or the shoreline sites are highly likely to run into our students there and get asked to take a survey.
But I mean, I agree with Dr. Powers. Should you wait till next year? we have a skewed perspective on it this year.
Cedar Point is
open for the rodeo, but it's been closed for a while. I mean, so there's a pier that's closed. There's a launch that's closed. You know.
Yeah, it's a good point. And there's a lot of places that are under work for improvements in Baldwin County. There's a lot of sites that are getting some improvements there. But it's... it's an area where people love to get to the water, so we want to provide the science that helps us understand where these access points are and what they can provide.
Hey, y'all can input your science on the surveys when you're down here. Heck, you can hit us up on the text line right now at 343-0106. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors from the 92nd Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo.
bottom seems fine, but it'll be interesting to hear what yesterday's sea conditions were like offshore chasing kings, which is another thing that we got to get you back on the show. You know, Dr. Powers, we've talked about it with Mike. The king mackerel thing is just very interesting, and last time you were on, we talked about the area of low dissolved mm-hmm. oxygen out here, how kings have, it's not like they're gone, but they're not, talk about the old man effect, where they used to be. Like, they come in there later in the year or move. It's kind of odd, and maybe it has something to do with that oxygen. I don't know.
But I guess, you know, I mean, that's one where Steven's group and my work group work closely together, because I'm not sure they're as popular as they once were, and I'm not sure the effort hasn't changed. Now, obviously, there's a feedback.
Can't go find them, you know.
There's a feedback. If people aren't catching them, then I can start targeting them and all that. But I'm, you know, years ago, king mackerel were the problem mm-hmm. in the Gulf of Mexico, and then they recovered. I mean, this is the 80s, 90s.
Oh, well, that, and it's like a timing thing, because even talking to people, I don't fish kings much anymore at all, but they'll say, you know, they're crying the blues this time of year, but they said, but here comes September, it's like October as good as it ever was. Yeah. But they weren't there when they traditionally were. And it's a bait thing or a BO thing. I have no idea. That's why we got y'all. That's why we got scientists.
Cool.
And to research this. And Dr. Cyphers, this continues. So there's a chance that when you're weighing fish in down here, somebody's going to come up to you and just say, hey, I want to ask you a few questions. Or how do we, like, if people get asked that, they're going to be asked, somebody's going to come up to you with the clipboard and say,
that's it.
So that's what we're talking about right now, is what y'all will be asked.
That's it. So this year, our survey at the rodeo, every year we try to keep these to about 5 minutes. I hope yours wasn't much longer than that yesterday. No. But we try to keep them pretty short. We try to catch you in a time when you are kind of either waiting on your fish or standing in a longer mm-hmm. line. So to not hold anybody up. You know, again, we're super grateful for all the support that folks have had. Take a few minutes, though, if you're there with the grad students, to ask them about what they do. They do really cool work. And one of the things we're more and more excited about, as Dr. Powers mentioned during the break, is we're not really two separate groups in that. Right. We're having some of our students that want to do surveys that then want to go in there and learn how to pull an otolith out of a fish from his group. And a lot of those students then want to know, hey, what are anglers actually thinking? And so we'll send them out to do some surveys.
I think that makes me more valuable leaving school, to have that, like, Swiss Army knife set of skills, right? I can do this, the heavy science here. I could go in there and pull that otolith, and also know why the angler wants to know, you know, I want more days or less days or something like that. I think that's way more.
And
valuable.
It's so important that these students learn how to be scientists that can speak to the public, because natural resource management, whatever resource it is, is so different than other scientists.
No, and I've celebrated you and others like
in the lab.
Well, you speak regular people language. Yeah. Like, you know all this stuff, and you could, you know, probably when you're amongst your, you know, other scientists, y'all talk another language, but you come hang out with me and you call things names that I know what they are and explain them in a way that I... Now, and it's not that people are dumb, it's just people don't have, you know, the same words you learned mm-hmm. in school. You can tell them what the concept is, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it. And so that's an important thing. Oh, you did mention, too, talk about satisfaction with fisheries and changes that have been made to fisheries. You know, shocker, most of my life, speckled trout limit size and creel was the same. I mean, I think almost my whole life, and then it changed. And we didn't know whether, you know, the world was going to fall down around us with the change. I've seen people been pretty positive about it. Any kind of science showing that the numbers are doing well with the, you know, the slot limit and the creel reduction?
Yeah, so for speckled trout, we just finished assessment. We're just polishing it up for the state, but it looks like that fishery is really, really healthy now. I mean, the changes definitely influenced it. We probably had a couple of good years where the environment was right. The environment will always swamp any management that we do, but it looks
explain
like...
Explain that real quickly. I know we don't have long, but explain that, like, the two-minute version of the environment swamping management.
So I like to use the oyster example. You know, for 10 years, we had pronounced drought, the wrong salinity regime, warmer temperatures, and we could do a lot of things to help the oysters, but if the small oysters aren't surviving because of the water quality, the salinity's not right, or there's nothing you can do except for make the regulations to be prepared when the environment improves, because the environment changes year to year. There's long-term trends, clearly, but year to year. And it's the same thing. You know, we saw it for flounder. Mm-hmm. You know, the new management regulations came, and we had a couple of good years. What they want is access to the delta, a little cooler delta, a little more salinity. So we were able to figure that out. Speckled trout, you know, we have a good idea of what causes a good recruitment year for them, so they're little ones to survive. But you still need the management regulations in there to take advantage of those good years so you build up those older age spawners. And we believe that's what's going on with speckled trout right now. Sorry, we call it spotted sea trout.
Yeah, if you say that, we'll throw you out of the bar. So.
So anyway, so it looks really good. And from all I've seen from the anglers, you know, we've seen a lot of just shy of 22, maybe a little larger than 22-inch fish, and we've seen a couple of lunkers, so which is in the rodeo above 26 inches. So, you know, I think that's going to be a success story. So,
yeah, I do wonder, like, it, not to give away their places, but, you know, a lot of these big trout are coming from some places north of us where we're sitting right here. We'll put it that way. Deeper, hypersaline. You know, I wonder if that, and I know that there's, speckled trout need a certain amount of salinity to reproduce. They can live in less, but to reproduce. I wonder if there's any effect that those bigger fish end up, a lot of them, not that they're not all through the system, but there seems to be a higher density of them in these deep places, maybe man-made artificially deeper places, that they reproduce better. Or I don't know.
Okay. It could be. Speckled trout definitely like higher salinities. Redfish, flounder, they can all deal with lower salinities. Not saying you won't find speckled trout low salinity, but
if they're going to make babies, they need higher salinity for sure, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, no, I mean, in fact, I was asking a couple of the local guides that we rely on a lot for information. I was like, is it like redfish or triple tail? Do you have to go to Louisiana to get the big trout? And it was like, no, there's no Venice effect on trout. The biggest trout are always homegrown.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I would say that. I mean, there's occasionally, you know, a story from South Pass or something, you know, Venice, where some big ones, but I don't know that they can, you couldn't do the same thing over here and fishing for 3 days.
Yeah. So, I grew up in Louisiana,
that's why I like to dog you out all the time.
And everything's bigger from Louisiana.
Yeah,
look at me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But, you know, our fishery is in much better shape. Louisiana has finally made some much needed long-term changes, and Alabama really is ahead of the curve in a ton of natural resource management, particularly fish and wildlife and marine resources. A lot of it, we would hope, is because we have trained really good scientists, and we have a diverse group from social scientists to natural scientists. But a lot of it's we have the leadership that listens to scientists right now. So it's rare Alabama is in the lead, but I think they are.
I like it. Dr. Seifert, Dr. Powers, thank you. Thanks for what y'all doing. And y'all fill out your survey when you're down here. And then if you got any questions about why your fish didn't win, you leave it with the emperor of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio, Dr. Powers. All right, appreciate y'all. I'm going to get back out on the water and fish, and we'll talk on Monday for Midday Mobile.